In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus.
Holy Mary, Mother of God,
pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Seed of wisdom, in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Our second course is on comparative religion. First, by way of introduction, I have written several books in comparative religion. This is the most comprehensive, covering all the major religions of the world. The reason for taking a course in comparative religion is that there is such widespread, what shall I call it, maneuvering to promote rival religions to both Christianity and Catholicism. After the Second World War, when some 50 new nations came into existence in Africa, Asia, most of these nations forbade Protestant missionaries to evangelize in their countries. Protestant missionary work is over 250 years old. And having taught in New York for 14 years, I came to know the leaders of the Association of, Christian Religions in New York. They told me that with the Protestant missionaries being forbidden to continue evangelizing India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and several dozen countries in Africa, what they decided was to direct all their energy and their money, billions of dollars, in converting the Latin American Catholics to Protestantism. They have been phenomenally successful. Vatican's figures are at least 1 million Latin American Catholics become Protestants every year. That's one side. Then, non-Christian religions like Islam, the most powerful religion in the world, powerful through its weaponry. Muhammad, the founder of Islam, I consider the greatest military leader of all times. Superior to Caesar, superior to Napoleon. And what he did was to create a new religion called Islam to be promoted by force of arms. And the most extensive and powerful Muslim city in America is, in case you don't know, Detroit. The impact has been gigantic. The New Age movement. I'm away from Calcutta. I spent several hours in London, said Mass there, had a meal, and on my way back to the airport. And I saw a big bookstore, but two walls covered, and every one was a distinct book, several hundred books, all on the New Age. New Age is simply Hinduism and Buddhism imported to the Western world, penetrating the lives of millions of once professed and believing Catholics. However, it's not just my theory for protective reasons, but over the years, having taught my own Jesuits from all over the world, and they came in from all over the world, I was teaching them in the United States. They go back to the various countries, and I found out so many of them knew very little about the religions, Buddhism, Jainism, Islam, you name it, going back as priests, well, to exercise the priesthood in these largely non-Christian countries. So I prayed, and it seemed obvious. I better understand these non-Christian religions. I'm going to prepare my Jesuits to go back to India, Tanzania, wherever they were going back to, and exercise their priestly ministry. So I spent years studying the non-Christian religions, and then decided, as the book you have illustrates, to write on the subject. I am guessing, but I would say at least 250,000 copies of this book have been printed and bought. Now, what I'd like to share with you is what I have in your opening chapter on comparative religion in perspective. I will just choose and pick. I have a larger printout for my... Oh. You don't have this, do you? You have it in your book, though. I'm sorry. I borrowed. Oh. Thank you. I didn't get a copy of the book, so... It's page 3 in your... Shall I call it a textbook? And the same thing, may I ask you? Now, our next class, to read, first of all, as I told you to read the whole of the set of notes, the document of Second Vatican II on the priesthood. Secondly, will you please read this chapter on comparative religion in perspective. Our time is necessarily limited in the number of weeks we have to cover the class matter. I would like to just choose and pick a sentence here or a sentence there to give you some perspective as to why we are taking this course and its value. Never before were there more urgent reasons to learn about the religious faith and practices of other people. We are the universal instinct to know all we can about our fellow man in order to know ourselves. And I would say, as I've taught so many priests over the years, and we were the Holy See, lecturing to missionaries for 6 winters on the visiting professorship taught at the University of Ottawa. and taught. We all compare it to religion, to missionaries who came back to, in this case, Canada, to get a graduate degree, including a doctorate, if they wanted it, in the religions of the world. This is now almost 2,000 years since Christ came into the world. Some 6 billion people in the world today. At very most, 2 billion are even nominal Christians. Whether Catholics, Protestants, Orthodox, you name it. And most of the world is not even Christian in name. Some 900 million Muslims. And we're going to convert the world that Christ told his apostles, proclaim the gospel to all nations. And this is what the Holy See has been telling me. We must understand something about the religions of other people. Of course, you better know your own Catholic faith well. If we're going to, as we say, convert these people both to Christianity and, please God, to Catholic Christianity, we must know something about what they believe. Why? This may be a surprise to you. I would never have got into the science of comparative religion if I had not, over the years, learned that these non-Christian religions have a great deal of truth within them. Misguided, misdirected, misinterpreted, and of course, woefully inadequate. And consequently, and this is the mind of the Holy Father, when you convert people, say among the Protestants, to the Catholic faith, or among the non-Christians, to Christianity, the secret is to build on what we have in common. Let's go to the last paragraph of page 3. In rampant communism, we deny the existence of a personal God in all glories in its conquest, almost a fourth of the world's population is part of the result of ignorance on both sides of the idealism of the East and West. And I hope I've said this before, the most powerful communist country in the world is the United States. Do you hear me? The most powerful communist nation in the world is the United States. I began reading Karl Marx, as I've said more than once, at the age of 14. Marxism has been adopted by so many of our leaders in America. And in Marxism, as we know, there is no faith in a personal God. And this is the main theme of Pope John Paul II in his, as I mentioned earlier, Splendor of the Truth. whole nations, says the Holy Father, had become pagan. Where their norm of morality is what? Their own mind and their own will, which is, having taught graduate courses in Marxism over the years, a good simple definition of Marxism. Let me go on. Bottom of the next page, 4. A graphic example of ineptitude in handling a grave problem is the current one of offering contraception as the best, if not unique, solution to the so-called population explosion. Many of the world's peoples resent America's promotion of contraceptives because it violates their spiritual natures. Burma, for example, is 85% Hinayana Buddhist, with high ideals of self-sacrificing charity. His leaders are brutally frank in exposing what they consider self-interest disguised as philanthropy. American politicians, the Burmese are told in a Rangoon publication called The Nation, are obsessed with this thing that somebody has called Asia's population explosion, unquote. We can say is that if the dispensing of birth control information is the limit of American ingenuity, inventiveness, and technical know-how, they are welcome to use all of it themselves. One nation after another, and America is controlling billions in population and billions in finances. And as you may remember, when at the United Nations meeting in Beijing, there was to be a massive opposition, precisely opposition to the overpopulation of, well, countries in Asia and Africa. Guess whom, maybe you know, Pope John Paul II got to side with the Catholic Church and Beijing. Guess whom? The Muslims. Thank God. Let me continue. 50 years ago, it would have been naive to talk seriously about a dialogue between Christianity and the non-Christian religions of the world. But how much has happened since the middle of the present century? Third full paragraph on page 5. Any response that Christians make to the non-Christian world must be predicated on the assumption that a new situation has arisen which demands intelligent appraisal and reaction. What is this new encounter with the great religions of the East, Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam, Shinto, and Confucianism, to which we are supposed to respond? In numerous ways, the non-Christian cultures of Asia and Africa have entered the stream of Western thought and action to a degree unparalleled at any time in the past. And the New Age is only one example. I know of no college or university in America that does not teach comparative religion. Courses in the religion of the world. And I've either read through and familiar with, I would say, easily 20 of these textbooks. In every one, there was a search for a common denominator in which Christianity, and of course Catholicism, is just, well, another of the many religions of the world. And the net result is that Catholicism, for many Americans, is, well, just another religion. And when Hillary Clinton, for obvious political reasons, I'm sure you know that, made, shall I call it, a pilgrimage to Fatima. Did you know that? And Father Robert Fox, my dear friend, features Hillary Clinton in his magazine. In Rome we say, Mamma Mia. We better know, and I mean not just know about, but understand as much as with God's grace we can about the other religions, both, I repeat, because under Christ's command, we are to share the fullness of God's truth, which God became man to teach the world, with those who do not have the fullness of truth in plain Catholic Anglo-Saxon to convert these people. But secondly, we need to know these other religions to protect our own faith. And I know what I'm talking about. The single deepest ambition of the United Nations is to create a new one world religion. Widely propagandized. Now, the bottom of page 7, for those like us who believe they possess the fullness of God's revelation to know about the religious systems of the world as a means of opening their horizon and animating their zeal to communicate what they have with others who are less privileged than they. Something like 2 years for the Archdiocese of Detroit to close 42 parishes. Chicago, same time, closing 62 parishes. All other reasons to the contrary notwithstanding, in my judgment, the main reason is a weakening, a darkening, and in wide circles, the loss of authentic Catholic faith by so many still professedly believing Catholics. Hear it. We are to understand, and I would say anything. For example, can you see this piece of chalk? Can you tell what color it is?
Yellow.
It is?
Yellow.
Yellow. What color is this?
White.
What color is this? get a point in my cast cigarette. One of the basic norms of understanding anything is comparison, contrast. To distinguish yellow from white, yellow from green, yellow from orange. We're going to understand our Catholic faith. You better be able to distinguish. Am I making sense? Distinguish the Catholic religion from, say, Shinto. I've never heard about Shinto. And my friend, you better start hearing something. Otherwise, you'll be another one of the millions of Christians in America who have bought the New Age movement lock, stock, and barrel. The New Age movement is the Oriental religions imported into such countries as the United States. Hesitate, say, but I think I should. I am, I think, in passing, made references to Thomas Merton. As you know, if you've read his Seven Story Mountain, a convert to the Catholic faith, became a Catholic, then shortly after joined the Trappists. And he became very soon a prominent writer. Well, a book that I published, I think, in 72, Christianity, the 20th Century, a large section, many pages, on Thomas Merton. But then he died shortly after I began writing the book. Our deference to the dead removed all the pages on Thomas Merton. Thomas Merton became first attracted by and then bewitched by the mystics of the Orient. And I'm sure you know, where did Thomas Merton die?
India.
Yeah, near India. But, well, let's make it general. In Asia, attending an international congress on world religions. His first biographer, Thomas Merton, claimed that Merton died a Buddhist. I don't think so. I think he still held, I want to think, the essentials of Christianity. There will be no New Age movement in the world today without Thomas Merton. My Jesuit superiors told me to work with both his abbot and with Thomas Merton, which I did. Things I will never publish, even talk about beyond the few words that I'm sharing with you. He was mesmerized, and I'm using a very mild verb, mesmerized by the Asiatic religions. Take a man like, oh, pardon me, how wonderful, Can you read it? Real blessing by Matthew Fox. Creation spirituality. Our total borrowing from Asian religions. Widespread. Not just in America, other countries too. Creation spirituality. You notice when I'm stressing both to know what these religions have in common with our Catholic faith, and I have to use the verb to protect ourselves from being, and I have to say it, seduced by people whose religion may be very deep, very strong. In case of Hinduism, yes, 4,000 years old. Let's go on. Page 8. Some basic principles. Any approach to comparing the religions of the world assumes certain principles of judgment, at least as a norm for classification. But more important, to make sense of what is otherwise a maze of gods and goddesses, mythological fancies, and philosophical theories, all strung together against the background of myriad details which the average Western mind has no context, almost no point of reference. I know what I am saying. Either we Catholics understand as much as we can and watch it on Catholic premises, because in this you must believe. Otherwise, I would recommend you're not taking the course. You must believe that the Roman Catholic Church has the fullness of truth, and that Catholic Christianity is normative for all religions. Am I clear? That is why my first book on the Protestant Church of America, widely read. And all I need to do is to catch up with the latest denominations, come out with a new edition. They keep changing so fast. As I know, the Protestants, they want a Catholic estimate. It's got to be authentically Catholic of their own religions. That's why I've said more than once. The Lutherans, the Baptists, the Anglicans pay the Jesuits good money to hire a Jesuit priest to teach them, can you imagine, Catholic Christianity. Are they out of their minds? No. You've got to love these people. Well, you must know your own faith and show them. Say, my dear Lutherans, you've got so much in common with the Catholic faith that Martin Luther abandoned on the first Halloween. And we now understand Halloween, October 31st, 1517. In other words, we will understand our own Catholic faith only, I keep repeating, by comparing it with. See the contrast between them and us. What they have, which we share, or what we have and they share, and where we differ, and where the difference is not merely semantic or verbal, but real. The first thing that strikes us as we delve into the living religions of mankind And as I've said more than once, I've also taught over these years, I have taught the extinct religions, Roman religion, Greek religion, Egyptian, Babylonian, four principal religions that I've taught over the years, all pre-Christian, which have disappeared. These are living religions. Is a fairly clear difference between what is properly their faith or creedal elements and the mythology that surrounds them. In other words, you don't just talk to an ordinary Muslim whom you happen to meet. And I've taught Islam. Listen to this. Two courses that I've taught from Chicago or my own university. I've taught about Islam to Muslims. Of course, as a Catholic, needless to say, and this is part of our training, most good dictionaries will define a Jesuit as shrewd, cunning, intriguing. So they're reading about Islam, but I make sure they learn all they can about Christianity. And they eat it up. They love it. In other words, there's so much mythology in these religions that is not really their religion. Having correctly pointed out that the mythological side of man's religion belongs to the poetical part of his nature, it is strangely forgotten in some quarters that a myth is the work of imagination and therefore a work of art. Unless these things are appreciated artistically, they're not appreciated at all, with the result that long dissertations are written and theories spun about the origin of myths, instead of seeing them as a spontaneous and exuberant expression for certain deep but often undefined beliefs of the true religious spirit of the people. And anyway, we, United States, we better wake up. I think I did tell you when I began the teleconferences on the angels and demons, had somebody do some research, find out how many books on the angels are currently in print in the United States and in English. And my God was 153. Remember the number of fish? Remember the apostles caught having fished all night, couldn't find anything. Our materialistic culture is sick and tired of our materialism. Am I making sense? Things you can touch, feel, taste, see, which we have in common with the animal world. You've got so much of this. We are the most fed nation in the world. You're also, and this is percentage-wise, the nation that has most people undergoing, what term shall I use, some form of psychotherapy. If there's one thing that we should know, and as we're beginning this course, and by the way, read as much as you wish from the book that I've shared with you. We need to know that underlying every authentic religion is what? Is the spirit. Is that which we have in common, shall I use the expression, in common with God. In other words, by definition, a spirit is what cannot be perceived by the senses. So, does anyone speaking English have any doubt what we mean when we use the word nonsense? Say that again. Everyone who speaks English knows what we mean by the word nonsense. It's stupidity. It's unreal. As though the only real world were perceivable by the senses. Am I clear? I want to tell somebody that something is not important to me. For example, what time shall we have a meeting? And without a second thought, we say, it's immaterial to me. What do you mean, immaterial? It's not important. And talk about being a materialistic culture. We've even made a verb out of a noun, matter. It does not matter to me. I just want to illustrate how profoundly materialistic our culture is. In every religion, by definition, with no exceptions, if it's a religion, believes in a world which is not perceptible by the senses. Starving Americans, and I mean that, starving for the truth, will latch on to anything to give them some relief from the materialistic society in which they live. In the middle of page 9, paired with this inner religious core, more familiar inner structure of the main religious cultures as cogitated, by the way. I think I've said this before. So I read some things that I published in my, well, less humble days. Harden. Whatever possessed you to use the word as cogitated. You proud author. Pardon these words. The inner structure, the main religious cultures. Well, thought out by speculative philosophers. Most people outside of Christianity are not literate. Hear that. That needs to be known. Their own faith seldom appears in print, and for the most part is known only by and from those who have lived on intimate terms with this, call it a majority mind, of Afro-Asia. All the evidence points to their faith being religious in the fundamental sense of theistic, even where a crude polytheism obscures the belief in a superior, in that sense supreme, personal divinity. Now, and let's be careful, we must distinguish the hundreds, I want to say even thousands of millions, of non-Christians who are not educated, as we speak of a sophisticated mind going through school, including, of course, college and the university. Thank God, most of the human race has not gone to college. Thank God. All the evidence points to their faith, as I said, be religious. In other words, they believe in something beyond and beneath the visible world that we can see and touch. Now the literati, the educated, whose written productivity has created the false impression that what they profess or doubt or deny is the common possession of most non-Christians. That's a most important statement. You never guess. Read books on whatever religion you want to study. Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, whatever. And most of the people, say, in China, well, are of the Buddhist or Taoist persuasion from what you read in books by specialists in these comparative religions. Yeah. And that is why Francis Xavier, when he went to India, sent by Ignatius, spent just 10 years in India. In 10 years, and at times, he was so dead tired baptizing, somebody had to hold his hands so he could pour water over the people. Over 100,000 people he baptized in his 10 years in India. But most of those were what we now call the outcasts. Hear it, philosophers. And I mean philosophers in Western countries like the United States are atheistic. Not because they necessarily oppose the idea of a personal God, but because they are indifferent to Him as eternal lawgiver who must be obeyed. And therefore, and I thought this chapter should first be written before I got into these other religions. And what I got about these other religions, of course, I've got from printed sources. But most of my knowledge I got from those who had lived among these people, who knew these people, who loved them, and told them, no. For example, in extreme form, philosophic Buddhism denied the existence of God altogether and placed exclusive emphasis on the deliverance of the immortal soul from the body. And in Detroit, I've seen I don't know how many places in Detroit where they teach some form of, well, of Buddhism. Always its attitude is conditioned by an unquestioned belief in reincarnation. And this, by the way, is the single deepest belief of the non-Christian world, especially in Asia. Namely, reincarnation, which it considers not as something desirable, but as the supreme evil. Human life, for the theorist of Buddhism, is not God's greatest gift to man, but a curse that inheres in the very nature of things. Tangible matter and the body are a perpetual drag on the soul, from which the soul longs to be freed That is, in going through the streets of Calcutta for 5 weeks, during most of November and into December, thousands, millions, at least 1 million, living on the streets. And thousands, as I've said more than once, sleeping on the sidewalks, streets of Calcutta. And they dare not try to rise above their present condition. Or others, I've seen matrons in bright silk saris a dying body on the sidewalk. Hold on to something and step over the dead body. Never a thought. Never a thought. That's a human being. And this is why 24 years in teaching the missionaries of charity has taught me so much about the need for understanding our own faith more deeply, more clearly, more lovingly, by contrasting what, thank God, we know is the truth in comparison with the wild, incredible beliefs of those who do not share what we possess.